I am now reading the first part of chapter 11 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections. Chapter 11, The Perfection of Equanimity. The commentary to the Basket of Conduct defines the perfection of equanimity as follows. Quote, equanimity has the characteristic of promoting the aspect of neutrality. Its function is to see things impartially. Its manifestation is the subsiding of attraction and repulsion. Reflection upon the fact that all beings inherit the results of their own karma is its proximate cause. Unquote. The perfection of equanimity is even-mindedness. It is non-disturbance by controversial conduct of people or by trying events. If we do not habitually develop satipatthana, we are easily affected by attachment and aversion, and the citta is not calm. We encounter outside objects which cause sadness and distress. Our unhappy mood is conditioned by unpleasant objects which appear through eyes, ears, nose, tongue, and body sense. People who are free from sorrow are unaffected by attachment and aversion with regard to people and events, and this means that they have developed the perfection of equanimity. When people see someone who kills a snake, they believe that they have loving kindness and compassion for the snake that is being killed, but in reality, they are disturbed by aversion towards the person who kills the snake. One should be aware and consider the citta at that moment. What type of citta arises when one thinks of the person who kills the snake? We may not have loving kindness, but then we can have equanimity when we realize that everyone receives the results of his deeds. When kusala citta arises, there may be loving kindness and there may also be compassion. One feels sorry for the person who commits akusala kama, since he will receive the result of akusala kama. When equanimity arises, we shall not be disturbed or utter unsuitable speech to someone who commits akusala kama. Loving kindness or equanimity arise with kusala citta. We should not take akusala for kusala. We should not believe that akusala dhamma is good and that we should utter strong language to the person who commits akusala kama. The citta which is disturbed is akusala citta. If we develop panya, we can know the characteristic of the citta that is stable, unaffected by aversion and by attachment. Then we can further develop the perfection of equanimity. Wise attention, yoniso manasikara, is essential. When we listen to the Dhamma, we may be inclined to think that we should act in a particular way so that we have wise attention or can abandon defilements. However, if we understand realities as non-self, the question whether we should act in a particular way will be solved. If we do not reflect on the practice of the Bodhisattva in each of his lives, and if we do not evaluate our own practice in this life and compare it with his practice, we shall not know that it will take an endlessly long time to abandon defilements. We need sati sampajanya, and we have to develop each kind of kusala with patience and endurance in order to realize the Four Noble Truths. We should not have expectations as to the moment when we shall realize the Four Noble Truths. So long as we have many defilements which arise time and again, and have desire for the realization of the Four Noble Truths, we are very far away from the goal. Therefore, we should begin to develop all kinds of kusala, so that they become supporting conditions leading to enlightenment. We read in the commentary to the Tiragata, the Paramatta Dipani, and the Nidana Katha, that all perfections support and enhance each other. Quote, "The utmost patience in the accumulation of good qualities such as dana in order to attain the awakening wisdom of the solitary Buddha or the awakening wisdom of the disciple is called energy, virya. Endurance with regard to anger is called patience, kanti. Generous deeds, the undertaking of moral conduct, sila, and so on, and the abstention from speech that deviates from the truth is called truthfulness, sakka. Determination which is unshakable and firm, so that one can accomplish what is beneficial in all circumstances, is called determination, adhitana. Aiming for the benefit of all beings, which is the foundation of the practice of dana, sila, and so on, is called loving-kindness, metta. Even-mindedness with regard to trying circumstances and behavior of other beings is called equanimity, upekkha. Therefore, when there are dana, sila, and bhavana, mental development, or when there are sila, samadhi, and panya, it can be said that the perfections of energy and so on have reached accomplishment in those ways." Unquote. We need the greatest patience for the accumulation of generosity. We need energy. We need to be unshakable and firm in order to accomplish what is beneficial in all circumstances. It is useful that the perfections are referred to in different ways, in slightly different wordings, although the meaning is the same. For example, as we read in the commentary to the Tiragata, quote, "Aiming for the benefit of all beings, which is the foundation of the practice of dana, sila, and so on, is called loving-kindness, metta." Unquote. Thus, this is just another aspect of metta. People who perform generous deeds may not consider their cittas at such moments. They may not even realize that they give because of metta. It is their nature to give, and therefore they perform generous deeds. They give things away for the benefit and happiness of others. If they consider their kusala citta, they will know that metta is the foundation of their generosity. When they abstain from ill deeds through body speech and speech, the foundation of their kusala is also metta. They do not want to cause suffering and distress to others by their actions or speech. In the commentary to the Basket of Conduct and the Miscellaneous Sayings, it is explained as to each perfection to which kind of akusala it is opposed. We read, for instance, about generosity, quote, "Further, giving is opposed to greed, hatred, and delusion, since it supplies the qualities of non-greed, non-hatred, and non-delusion to gifts, recipients, and the fruits of giving, respectively." Unquote. As we read, "The perfection of generosity is opposed to akusala, to lobha, dosa, and moha, because when one is generous and accumulates the perfection of generosity, one practices the quality of non-attachment to one's gifts. If someone still clings to the object he will give, he just cannot give. He regrets the loss of his gift. He may think of giving, but he cannot give. He desires to wait for an opportunity to give. If someone is not firmly established in his determination to give, he may think of giving, but he does not give. At such a moment, there is no generosity. Whereas, when there is true generosity, it is accompanied by non-attachment. One does not cling to the object one is giving. At the moment of kusala citta, there is also non-aversion towards the person who receives the gift. If one is displeased and dislikes the receiver, one will not give. This may happen when someone sees, for instance, a beggar and notices that he has sufficient physical strength. He may be irritated and hence does not give. Or when someone sees a handicapped child which the beggar takes along, he may be irritated about the beggar causing affliction to his child, and then he does not give. When generosity arises, it has to be accompanied by the good qualities of non-attachment to the gift, non-aversion towards the receiver, and it may be accompanied by non-delusion or panya as well. When panya knows the result of generosity, when it realizes that generosity is wholesome, there is true liberality and defilements are abandoned. We read further on in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct about sila and about renunciation, quote, "Virtue, sila, is opposed to greed, hatred and delusion, since it removes crookedness and corruption in bodily conduct, etc. Renunciation, nekama, is opposed to these three corruptions, since it avoids indulgence in sense pleasures, the affliction of others and self-mortification." Unquote. If we do not cling to sense pleasures, it is natural that there will also be less aversion. If someone has a great deal of attachment to visible object, sound, other flavor and tangible object, but does not obtain these objects, he will be displeased. We read in the commentary about panya, quote, "Wisdom opposes them in so far as greed, etc., create blindness, while knowledge restores sight." Unquote. Wisdom is opposed to akusala, as it dispels the darkness of attachment, and so on, and restores sight. As soon as we have seen something, attachment is bound to arise. When panya is lacking, there is no opposition to lobha, which is skillful in clinging to all the sense objects. However, when panya arises, attachment cannot arise at the same time. Panya is opposed to attachment. Only panya can dispel the darkness of attachment. When panya arises, it is able to understand the true nature of the reality that appears. Panya understands kusala as kusala and akusala as akusala. When panya further develops, it will know the characteristics of realities as they are, so that the darkness of ignorance can be overcome. We read about energy and patience, quote, "Energy opposes lobha by arousing the true way free from both listlessness and restlessness. Patience opposes lobha by accepting the desirable, the undesirable, and the emptiness." Unquote. Each of the perfections is of great benefit provided we duly reflect on them and gradually accumulate them. If, in circumstances which are a test to our endurance, we reflect on patience, we can accumulate it. There can be patience with regard to disagreeable object and to desirable objects of which we can realize the emptiness. We read about truthfulness, quote, "Truthfulness is the opposite of loba, because it proceeds in accordance with fact, whether others render help or inflict harm," unquote. Because of truthfulness, we can know what is right and what is wrong, no matter in what circumstances we are. We read about determination, quote, "Determination is the opposite of these three defilements, since, after vanquishing the vicissitudes of the world, it remains unshakable in fulfilling the requisites of enlightenment in the way they have been undertaken," unquote. We should know of ourselves whether we have already firm determination in the development of Kusala or not yet. This is necessary so that we may become unshakable in accomplishing it. Our determination can easily vacillate. It may not be firm, and our confidence may not be steady. We read about metta, quote, "Loving kindness is the opposite of greed, hatred, and delusion, through its seclusion from the hindrances," unquote. These hindrances, nivarana, are sensuous desire, kamachanda, ill will, vyapada, sloth and torpor, tinamida, restlessness and worry, udaccha kukuccha, and doubt, vichikiccha. It is said that loving kindness is the opposite of loba because it is free from the hindrances. Only panya can know whether there are hindrances or not. If there is no panya, one may erroneously believe that there is metta. But in reality, there may be loba, which is the hindrance of sensuous desire. Panya is essential. It is also the factor which causes all kusala to further develop. We read about equanimity, quote, "And equanimity is their opposite by dispelling attraction and repulsion towards desirable and undesirable objects, respectively, and by proceeding evenly under varying circumstances," unquote. We should investigate the characteristics of all the 10 perfections and see their benefit. They are opposed to akusala dhammas. Realities are non-self. They are beyond control. Chittas arise and fall away all the time in succession. And this causes people's lives to be different. They have accumulated different kammas which produce different results, and also different inclinations which condition their varied ways of thinking. We read in the commentary to the Kindred Sayings, Roman 2, chapter Roman 12, 6, 3 suttas, paragraph 60, the base, Nidana Sutta, that the Dhamma taught by the Buddha for the benefit of all beings can be compared to 1,000 goods which are laid down on each doorstep for the benefit of the whole family. Some people may open the door and receive all those goods that are piled up before their doorsteps, whereas others do not even open their door. Ignorance is the condition for not seeing the benefit of the Dhammas, of the Dhamma, whereas Panya is the condition for realizing its benefit. Each moment of listening to the Dhamma is beneficial. There may not always be an opportunity to apply the Dhamma, but when we have listened to it, there are already conditions for Kusala Dhammas to develop and Akusala Dhammas gradually to decrease. We should have appreciation for someone who explains the Dhamma as taught by the Buddha. As we have seen, the Buddha's teachings can be compared to the laying down of 1,000 goods before each house door. We read in another section of the same commentary that people are confused and disturbed because of not understanding cause and results which take their course at each moment. This is compared to a cotton thread that is entangled, that has become a knot or a ball which cannot entangle by oneself. The commentary states, quote, "Only two kinds of bodhisattvas can entangle the knot, namely the Sammasambuddha and the solitary Buddha, the Pacheka Buddha, who have accumulated the perfections so as to realize the Four Noble Truths by themselves." Quote, this is the end of the first part of chapter 11, the chapter on the perfection of equanimity. I am now reading part 2 of chapter 11 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections. Part 2 of chapter 11, the chapter on the perfection of equanimity. The perfection of equanimity is even-mindedness. It is non-disturbance by controversial conduct of people, by trying events, or by the vicissitudes of life, no matter whether they are desirable or undesirable, such as gain and loss, praise and blame. At present, we suffer because of being easily disturbed and unstable, but someone who has firm understanding of karma can become unaffected by the vicissitudes of life. If one develops the perfection of equanimity, one does not pay attention to the wrongs of others, as the commentary to the Basket of Conduct explains. One can be impartial and even-minded, undisturbed by the wrongs of others, because one understands that people will receive the result of their own karma. Some people may think, when others receive unpleasant results, that it serves them right. But if someone has developed the perfection of equanimity, he will not think in that way. He is able to understand paramatta dhammas, ultimate realities, dhammas which are anatta and beyond control. We read in the Basket of Conduct, the perfection of equanimity, Romans 3:15, the great astounding conduct, that the Bodhisattva developed the perfection of equanimity to the highest degree, as an ultimate perfection, paramatta parami. During the life, he was the wise Lomahamsa. The commentary states, and I quote, "The great being was born at that time into a wealthy family, and he completed his education, mastering all branches of knowledge under the tutorship of the teacher Disapamuka. When his parents had died, he became disenchanted with the worldly conditions, and he acquired a sense of urgency, although the members of his family implored him while weeping to take care of the family possessions. He had become disenchanted because he contemplated impermanence with wise attention. He reflected on the foulness of the body, and he did not want to give in to the defilements that would cause him to be involved with married life. He thought of abandoning his possessions and becoming a monk, but then he considered that as a monk, his good qualities would not be apparent so as to become praiseworthy. That was why the great being, who was averse from gain and honour, did not enter the state of monkhood. He reflected, I should just have sufficient belongings so as not to exceed what is normal as to gain and loss. Unquote. Someone who becomes a monk receives praise because of the excellence of monkhood. However, the great being rejected the gain and honour which one would receive as a monk. He thought that even though he would not be a monk, he would conduct himself in such a way that others could praise him. He would not exceed what is normal as to gain and loss. This is a way of thinking which is firmly established in Kusala. The state of monkhood is different from the state of the layman. The monk is bound to receive more favours and honour than a layman because of the excellence of monkhood. But the Bodhisattva rejected gain and honour and he did not cling to them. He thought that he could lead a life as a layman without exceeding what is normal as to gain and honour. We read further on in the commentary, quote, he thought, I shall accumulate the practice of supreme patience, enduring derisive speech from others. I shall develop the perfection of equanimity to the highest degree. He left his home, dressed only in the clothing he was wearing. He practiced the elimination of defilements to the utmost. When he was without strength, he behaved as if he had strength. Though not dumb, he behaved as if he were dumb. While he was ridiculed by others because of his appearance that seemed to be of a fool, he wandered in villages, cities, and the capital, and he stayed in each place for only one night. Wherever he was much ridiculed, he stayed for a longer time. And when his clothing became worn out and unsightly, he did not accept another piece of clothing from someone else. He wandered about with clothing that served only to cover the private parts. While he wandered about in that way, he came to a house in the village. Unquote. This is the perfection of equanimity to the highest degree, which is most difficult to develop. He had many possessions, but he did not cling to them. He wanted to accumulate the perfection of equanimity. He endured derisive speech from others, and he went outside covered only by a piece of cloth. When he was without strength, he behaved as if he had strength. He was not downhearted and he had patience. Though not dumb, he behaved as someone who is dumb. He was not disturbed by anything. No matter what someone else said, no matter others ridiculed him because of his outward appearance, which seemed to be of a fool, he was unaffected. We all have different accumulated inclinations. We are attached to our appearance, to our clothing, to our car, to words of approval and praise from others. We like to be dressed beautifully. But the Bodhisattva had in that life great endurance. He was unaffected when others jeered at the way he was dressed. Where he was much derided, he stayed longer. Wandering about in that way, he came to a house in the village. And then we read, quote, there, in that village, the children of that family were of a mischievous character. They were prone to violence and liked to beat other people. Some children were relatives or slaves of the royal household. They had a cruel, fierce character. They uttered sarcastic, coarse, insulting speech, and they went about mocking all the time. When these children would see old, destitute people, they would take fine dust and scatter it all over their backs. They behaved in an improper, reproachable way, and they jeered at the people who were watching the scene. When the great being saw those mischievous children going about in the village, he thought, "Now I shall use a trick as a means of accumulating the perfection of equanimity, and therefore I shall stay in this place." And when those mischievous children saw the great being, they began to behave in an improper way. The great being stood up and pretended that he could not stand this any longer, and that he was afraid of those children. And when the children followed the Bodhisattva, he went to a cemetery, thinking, "Here nobody will interfere with the conduct of those children." He took a skeleton as a pillow to support him, and he lay down. Thereupon the children behaved in a very improper way, such as spitting upon him, and then returned. Every day they behaved in this way. When wise people saw the children's behavior, they forbid them to act in that way, saying, "This person has great powers. He is an ascetic, a great yoga practitioner." Those wise people greatly praised and honored the Bodhisattva. All Bodhisattvas are even-minded and impartial in every respect. The Buddha said, "I slept in the cemetery, taking as a pillow the skeleton of a corpse. I had even-mindedness with regard to what is clean and what is dirty." The village children conducted themselves in many rude, improper ways by spitting, jeering, defecating, and urinating. They poked blades of grass into the Bodhisattva's ears, and they were teasing and mocking as much as they liked. The Bodhisattva reflected, "The village children caused me to suffer pain, whereas those wise people gave me enjoyable things such as flowers, unguents, and food. I have even-mindedness. I am the same to all because I have equanimity. I am impartial, without excess, in all circumstances. I have no specific affection towards those who support me, nor do I speak angry words or have feelings of vengeance towards those who do not support me. Thus, I am impartial towards all people." Unquote. The Bodhisattva was unshakable and impartial, having no attachment to people who gave him pleasant things, such as flowers, unguents, and food, and having no anger towards those who disturbed him and made him suffer. Then we read further on, and I quote, "At that time the Buddha taught impartiality, not exceeding what is normal, not clinging to the vicissitudes of life. He was equipped with the requisite of enlightenment, that is wisdom, and hence he was impartial towards all beings, to those who supported him as well as to those who did not." He finally said, "I am even-minded towards happiness and misery, towards honor and dishonor. I am impartial towards everything, and this is my perfection of equanimity." The perfection of equanimity is even-mindedness, being without happiness and anguish, like a scale that is well balanced. The Buddha showed that he was impartial to all beings and to all vicissitudes of life. And this degree of equanimity is not common to other people." Unquote. We read further on in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct, and I quote again, "The Bodhisattva developed all 10 perfections, beginning with generosity, he gave away all his possessions and his own body without concern over whatever others wanted to do with it. That is the perfection of generosity. He abstained from whatever was improper and wrong, and that is the perfection of morality, sila. He developed the perfection of the foulness of his body. He abandoned attachment to sense pleasures. He left his home for the homeless life, and that is the perfection of renunciation. He was skilled in the discerning of the dhammas, which are a support for the requisites of enlightenment, and skilled in the abandoning of the dhammas opposed to those requisites. He was skilled in considering the specific nature of the beneficial dhammas, discriminating them from the wrong dhammas, and this is the perfection of paññā." Unquote. The disenchantment with sense pleasures and the endeavor to endure suffering is the perfection of energy. Endurance and forbearance are the perfection of patience. Truthfulness in speech and in the practice of abstention from what is wrong is the perfection of truthfulness. The firm, unshakable practice of what is right is the perfection of determination. Loving kindness and affection for all beings without being selective is the perfection of loving kindness, metta. As regards the perfection of equanimity of the bodhisattva, this has just been explained above. In the conduct of equanimity of the basket of conduct, the perfection of equanimity to the highest degree has been dealt with in order to proclaim the benefit and the power of the excellent qualities of the bodhisattva. He gave up his wealth, his circle of relatives, and he left his home in the same way as someone who enters the state of monkhood, although he did not become a monk. He lived in the same way as a monk. The bodhisattva did not cling to the state of monkhood. He was averse to favors and praise that accrue to the monk. The monk has to take and accept the reverence that people show him, and he strives for the excellence of the status of monkhood. The bodhisattva was just a monk at heart. He had the mentality of a monk, and in this way he lived in utmost happiness. Since the bodhisattva was averse to favors and praise that come with monkhood, he did not go forth. However, he was a monk at heart and developed kusala so that others would in truth respect him, even though he had not gone forth. We read further on, and I quote again, "He, the bodhisattva, had the highest degree of contentment with little. He delighted in tranquility. He had no concern for his body and his life, because his aim was equanimity. He practiced the abandonment of defilements to the highest degree. He endured the ugly deeds from others. He had the firm determination to diminish the defilements which were opposed to the requisites of enlightenment by even-mindedness in all respects. This caused him to be without excess, to be impartial towards others who supported him and to those who did not. He was like an arahat, and hence he did not cling to the vicissitudes of life. He reached the peak of the perfection of equanimity, and as such, it is preeminently a perfection leading to the awakening of a Buddha, the Buddha Parami." unquote. But the perfection of equanimity, by the perfection of equanimity, one can have impartiality towards all beings, and this is most difficult to practice. To sum up, the 10 perfections are generosity, dana, morality, sila, renunciation, nekama, wisdom, panya, energy, virya, patience, kanti, truthfulness, satya, determination, adhitana, loving-kindness, metta, and equanimity, upekkha. We should not neglect any one of these 10 perfections. We need them all. We need sincerity in the abandonment of defilements, and that is the perfection of truthfulness. We should remember to think of other people's wrongdoing with loving kindness. We also need the perfection of determination, the firm, unshakable determination to practice all kinds of kusala in order to reach the goal. We may have sincerity in our wish to abandon defilements, but so often we lack determination. We are just not firm enough in our determination to abandon defilements. We do need the perfection of determination for being sincere in our practice to eradicate defilements. We need the perfection of patience, that is, endurance. We need to develop all the perfections, and this is the only way to have wise attention to develop panya. This is the end of the chapter on equanimity. Now follows the epilogue to all the other chapters. The epilogue, which is entitled The Defilements of the Perfections. When attachment arises, when there is enjoyment and clinging, the 10 perfections are spoiled and defiled. When taken separately, the following is explained. Quote, taken separately, discriminating thoughts, vikappa over gifts and recipients, are the defilement of the perfection of giving, unquote. Sometimes, when we perform deeds of generosity, we select the receiver, or we have discriminating thoughts about the gifts by attachment, aversion, fear, or delusion. And when the perfection of generosity is defiled, it is not pure. The perfection of generosity should be developed towards all beings without discrimination. However, if we do have discriminating thoughts over gifts and recipients, we should investigate the characteristic of the perfection of generosity. At such moments, it is defiled. It is not as pure as it should be. We should have a refined knowledge of the perfections in our daily life. They have to be developed life after life in the circle of birth and death, so that they reach fulfillment. We read with regard to the perfection of morality, quote, discriminating thoughts over beings and times are the defilement of the perfection of virtue, unquote. Sometimes we can observe morality towards particular persons, such as people we respect, our parents, and so on. We may observe morality by showing respect to them in our gestures and speech, but we cannot do the same to other people. Or we may have discriminating thoughts as to the time for observing morality. We observe it only on Uposatha day, or on any particular day we select to observe the precepts. And then we may believe that we are perfect in morality, although on other days we do not observe morality. And that is a defilement of the perfection of virtue or morality. We read further on in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct about the defilement of the other perfections as follows, quote, discriminating thoughts of delight in sense pleasures and existence and of discontent with their pacification are the defilement of the perfection of renunciation. Discriminating thoughts of I and mine are the defilement of the perfection of wisdom, unquote. Even when we think in that way of Panya, it is already defiled. We have attachment to the thought of my Panya. We read further on about the defilement of the perfections, quote, discriminating thoughts leading to listlessness and restlessness of the perfection of energy, discriminating thoughts of oneself and others of the perfection of patience, discriminating thoughts of avowing to have seen what has not been seen, etc., of the perfection of truthfulness, discriminating thoughts perceiving flaws in the requisites of enlightenment and virtues in their opposites of the perfection of determination, discriminating thoughts confusing what is harmful with what is beneficial of the perfection of loving-kindness, and discriminating thoughts over the desirable and undesirable of the perfection of equanimity. In that way, the defilements should be understood, unquote. At times, we can have equanimity with regard to the undesirable, but not with regard to the desirable. The more we understand the Dhamma in detail, the more we will be inclined to practice the Dhamma. Formerly, we may have thought that we could not practice the perfections, that they were beyond our reach. However, if we only see the benefit of each of the perfections, and if we gradually develop them, they will eventually become accomplished. We can verify for ourselves that listening to the Dhamma and studying it is of the utmost benefit. It will enable us to apply the Dhamma in our daily lives, to develop Satipatthana together with all the perfections. This is the end of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections.